Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. Homeschool father of five, raising our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado. I've been involved with the homeschooling movement since the late 1960s, over 40 years now. It's hard to believe it's been that long. And friends, in the leadership of Christian Home Educators of Colorado here for the last 13 years, which means I've got a commitment to this movement for a lot of reasons. Number one, it's a great movement to undermine the socialist mentality that seems to be inculcated into the minds of millions and millions of kids around this country when they're being indoctrinated in socialist schools, that is government-funded schools. But it's also important because you've got a biblical base in many of these homes. And personally, I believe the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. And if you can bring that into the education of a child, then that's a great foundation for the future generations. And friends, the homeschooling movement promises to be pretty good for the future of this nation. Now, it's not a panacea. We've said that a number of times. It's, I believe, a wild card for where this nation is headed. Now, right now, it appears that we're going to full-fledged socialism. 64% of the people's income is being taxed by government at the local, state, and federal level, up from 10% in 1913. So, yeah, we're seeing a huge increase, an unbelievable increase in the involvement of government in every aspect of our lives. And so socialism is the future of this nation, we think. Except for one little wild card, and I call it the homeschool wild card. Now, number one, these kids are not being raised socialists in socialist schools. They're raised in families. And I think that's important. These kids are, for the most part, still committed to the social idea of the family. Now, I know that's a lost cause for 70% of the population that will not be raised by mother and father, and the 92% or whatever it is that gets processed through the socialist schools. Generally speaking, the socialist mentality is the guaranteed future of this nation, except for the fact that you have home-educated kids that are not being educated as socialists. Now, that's a wild card. That's a wild card. The second point I want to say about them is that home-educated students tend to be fairly engaged in society. They tend to like leadership. They tend to have a vision for life. Dr. Brian Ray looked at 7,200 homeschool graduates in his study, Homeschool Grows Up, and he found that homeschoolers were 14 times more likely to be involved in politics than their counterparts from public and private schools. I think that's an important data point. 14 times, not 14% higher, 14 times more likely. We're talking about young folks 18 to 25 years of age, were 14 times more likely to be involved in politics. That is in political campaigns, in political leadership, et cetera, et cetera. Home-educated kids tend to have a vision for the future, tend to like to be involved, and they want to make an impact. Now, here's the question for all of us. Will they be able to stop the trend towards the total government? Will they be able to stop forced euthanasia in the year 2025? I'm just asking the question. The future will require tremendous character for those who want to oppose the almost inevitable trends towards big government and the abrogation of our rights at just about every level. Well, we'll see. It's going to take a lot of character, a lot of wisdom to be able to stop the flow of history towards total government, at least in this country. But if any country's got a shot at freedom, friends, I think America still does. You think Mexico's in the competition for this? You think England's going to be the land of the free, the home of the brave in the year 2035? I don't think so. Not with the Muslims doing what they're doing. America's got a shot at freedom if they found themselves on the principles upon which the nation was founded. Biblical principles, if they understand the importance of virtue at the local level, if they understand the importance of strong families, strong character inculcated by the discipleship of caring parents to those kids for generations to come. If they believe in the principles of limited government and the principles of government that are found in the Word of God, friends, I think we've got a shot at freedom for the year 2045. Well, in just a moment, we're going to talk with somebody who's got a similar vision to this, and he's been working long, long days, months, and years on this movement. Will Estrada will be with me from Generation Joshua in just a moment. This is Kevin Swanson. The program is Generations.
I have always felt that doubt was the beginning of wisdom, and the fear of God was the end of wisdom.
Clarence Darrow.
The only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing.
Socrates.
Belief is the death of intelligence.
Robert Anton Wilson.
If thou trusteth to the book called the Scriptures, thou trusteth to the rotten staff of fables and falsehood.
Thomas Paine.
Faith is believing what you know ain't so.
Mark Twain.
Whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be delivered.
God.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight.
God.
The fool believes his own ideas to be wisdom, but those who fear God and search for understanding find true wisdom. To lead your family in the pursuit of godliness, pick up a copy of the Proverbs Study Guide at generationswithvision.com.
And welcome back to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. And with me also is Will Estrada. He is a Federal Relations Director for HSLDA, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and also Director for Generation Joshua. Will, welcome to the program. It's good to have you with us, friend.
Kevin, great to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I see you as I crisscross the nation and do homeschool conferences everywhere. It seems to me you are just about as omnipresent as I am, or maybe more so.
Well, I think you still get some more of them, but I think I'm trying to catch up with you.
Yeah.
See.
Well, you are busy, and you've got a lot of things going on in Washington. Give us a temperature with what's happening with our nation today in Washington. I know you're the Federal Relations Director for HSLDA. Can you just give us a snapshot of what's going on?
You got it. Well, as the Director of Federal Relations, what I do is I advocate for homeschoolers and parental rights in our nation's capital. So I'm working with the members of Congress. And, Kevin, I will tell you that things got a whole lot easier after Christians, homeschoolers, voters, people turned out and really elected a different type of leader in Washington, D.C., folks who understand the Constitution, folks who say we're spending too much and who say Washington is not the solution. We've got to start rolling things back to the states and the local level.
The 2010 election certainly was a correction towards the right, in both senses of the word.
not a full correction. Obviously, there's still a lot of work we need to do and still keeping our leaders accountable, but it was a really big step in the right direction.
Sure, sure.
What we've been seeing now is it's making it a little easier for us to get the message of homeschool freedom, parental rights, limited government to our elected officials. Kevin, you know that we've been talking about here at HSLDA and Mike Farris the dangers of the Convention on the Rights of the Child for a long time.
Big time.
Actually, just recently, the Obama administration, the State Department, released an update on where they are with all the UN treaties, and they said they still continue to strongly push for ratification of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And just for the sake of our new listeners, I'll give you three quick reasons of why the Convention on the Rights of the Child is a really bad idea. It's a UN treaty, was adopted in 1989, and the first thing is it hurts parental rights. It would allow social workers, courts, any sort of government official to step in anytime there's a disagreement between the parent and the child and say, well, we're going to see if this is in the child's best interests. Yeah. Currently, that doctrine is just left for if there's a divorce or
it would effectively roll back everything we have fought for the last 25 years.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Then second of all, the Convention on the Rights of the Child would hurt U.S. sovereignty. There's a committee. It sits in Geneva, Switzerland. It's made up of many different bureaucrats, unelected bureaucrats who are part of the United Nations. And this committee gets to set the domestic policy and law for any country that ratifies this Convention on the Rights of the Child. So we'd be turning over our laws, and we'd be forced to adopt what the committee recommends if we ratified this Convention on the Rights of the Child. We never voted for any of these folks.
I.e. George Washington, James Monroe, James Madison would hate this thing.
Oh, no, they would. They would. Our founders would say, what? This isn't what you're supposed to be ratifying.
Exactly.
And then the third thing, the Convention on the Rights of the Child would hurt even more our fiscal situation. There's a section in that convention, and it's been interpreted by the Committee on the Rights of the Child, to say that no country can spend more on defense than they spend on child's welfare, government taking care of kids, and that type of thing. So it would be at least 10 times more what the federal government spends on the Department of Education and a whole bunch of these departments that we sit here and say, our founders never intended the federal government to take over this area.
So, Will, what's the strategy? How do we beat this thing?
Well, the solution is twofold. The first one, the short-term solution, is a new resolution that was just introduced by our friend Senator Jim DeMint from South Carolina.
Okay.
It's called Senate Resolution 99. And if any of our listeners are just saying, well, you know, it's Washington, D.C., I live in Washington State or California, not much I can do, you can pick up the phone, call your two U.S. senators, and you can urge them to co-sponsor Senate Resolution 99. We're trying to get to 34 senators who've signed on. We're at 32 right now. Because, as you know, the Constitution says that all treaties that are ratified, it takes a two-thirds vote.
Yeah.
67 senators. So if we can get to 34,
wow,
sign on to this.
You are within two senators of making history and pushing back this onerous bill that really could destroy families in this country.
Exactly. And I will point out, unfortunately, neither of your senators, Kevin, have signed on to SRES 99, Mark Udall, Michael Bennett, as well as 68 other senators in our country.
Yeah. So we got to keep working on these guys.
You got it.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the long-term solution is the biggest fight that we're working on with Mike Farris, trying to pass a constitutional amendment to the U.S., the Parental Rights Amendment.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, Will, for that summary. And this is the battle, I believe. This is the battle that we are waging. It's the battle for the family, for family freedoms. And we've got to wage it. Otherwise, we're going to be in big, big trouble in the years to come. What the government funds, the government controls. What the government controls, especially if it's outside of the jurisdiction, the government destroys. And Will, I really believe if this thing comes through, if the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child is taken and used on this nation, we're going to be in trouble. It's going to do immeasurable damage to the institution of the family in this country.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, you wonder, Kevin, what is the greatest freedom that we enjoy in our country? And there are a huge amount that are so important.
The freedom to raise our children. I mean, that's huge. That's huge.
Because that's where we as Christians get to share our faith in Jesus Christ to the next generation,
mm-hmm,
to our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can't do that, if they're taken away from us and someone else is doing that, then what's going to happen to the future of our country, as well as, most importantly, their souls?
Great point. Great point. But, Will, at the same time that you're out there trying to plug a lot of holes in Washington to keep these dikes from coming down on us, we've got another strategy working here. And I think this is really key. I told Mike Farris this a couple of years ago. I said, you know, we're plugging holes in Washington, but if we can build new dikes about 100 yards back, we may be in better shape by the year 2045. And that's really what Generation Joshua is trying to do. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah. We've got to raise up a generation of principled, godly leaders who are able. They've got the character. They've got the commitment. They've got the willingness. They've got the learning. They've got the ability to wage this fight. And I hope that organizations like Generation Joshua and Teen PAC would accomplish this. And as we mentioned off air, I worked with Teen PAC for a number of years. And you've been working with Generation Joshua. These are both good programs. They have a little different focus, but we're doing the same thing. We're trying to build a future for this nation.
Exactly. Let me tell you a little bit about Generation Joshua. It's a division of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and our vision statement, what we exist to do, is simply to assist parents to raise up the next generation of Christian leaders and citizens who are equipped to positively influence the political processes of today and of tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that through several different options. First, we do education. We've got distance learning classes on our webpage, which are free of charge to people who join Generation Joshua.
They are amazing, too. I just went through them. I mean, you're talking about Sermons of the Founders. You're talking about the founding documents of the nation. You're talking
Federalist
about
Papers. Federal,
yeah. It's amazing, the courses you put together. And they are professional courses.
They are. They are. And we've also got a syllabus for each one,
mm-hmm,
so that parents, some school parents, homeschoolers and co-ops, they can look at it and say, well, how much credit could I give my child here for high school credit, for civics, for government, for history classes? Because if we don't know as Americans what our foundations were, where our country's foundations were, it makes it a lot harder for us to impact our country for good moving on.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about the other activities that you guys are engaged in.
And the other way that we educate is through our iGovern summer leadership camps.
Okay.
And these, I'll take a rabbit trail for a second and talk about them. These are week-long camps where we're having top-notch conservative and Christian leaders come in, talk to the kids. We've had Wendy Wright, the president of Concerned Women for America. We've had Tom Minery with Focus on the Family. We've had the Navigators come in. We've had Jeff Myers with Passing the Baton come in and speak. We've also had people like Michelle Bachmann, Mike Pence, Mike Farris, who have come in and talked to the kids and really shared their heart of what they've been doing and what God has laid on their heart, and how even young people who might not be old enough to register to vote can impact our country for good.
How did this whole thing get started, Will? The Generation Joshua. I know it was a vision that Mike Farris unrolled a number of years ago. What's the genesis of this thing?
Well, you're absolutely right. It was late 2003, early 2004, and just like how you said, that Mike Farris and yourself and other leaders in our nation were saying, sure, we're plugging the holes in the dike right now, but we need to do something so that long-term, young people are equipped, whether or not they ever run for Congress, even if they're just voters, you know, like you said, from plumbers to politicians, so that these young people, whatever God calls them to do in life, they're equipped to be the leaders and the voters of tomorrow. And Generation Joshua was formed. The name goes to, when we read the book of Joshua, you know, God led the nation of Israel out of Egypt, and the generation saw the amazing conquests that God gave them and how God answered prayer. But then the next generation came up, and, you know, were they going to continue to follow God and to go into the promised land? And Joshua says, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And they're faithful to God's command. And that's, I know that's your heart, Kevin, and that's Mike's heart, and so many of the other people who were really the pioneers in the homeschool movement.
And it's easy, I think, sometimes to pull out of Egypt, you know, to pull out from a social structure, but never really re-engage. See, a lot of homeschoolers do have some isolationistic aspects to them, and we don't want to criticize that. I mean, there's some use for that. But at the same time, God calls us to be salt, yeast, and light in our society about us, and you got to figure out ways in which you can make that happen.
Exactly, exactly. And one of the ways we've got the education, I'm going to come back to our iGovern summer leadership camps in a moment, but once the education is built up, then we have options for young people and their parents as well. We want this to be a whole family thing of the families educating, getting educated, learning, and then making an impact together. We've got an opportunity for them to come on in and work during elections, and that's called our student action teams, where whenever there's a federal election, the HSLDA Political Action Committee, we endorse pro-life, pro-family, pro-homeschooling candidates nationwide, and then we field teams of these parents, students, all led by HSLDA and Generation Joshua staff. We take vacation time to go do this because we feel so passionately about it. And we go and we work on these campaigns. So folks like Marco Rubio, we deployed over 100 young people, parents, and staff to go work on that race, all funded through the HSLDA Political Action Committee. And these young people, they've gotten the education. Now they get to jump in with both feet on the ground and see how they can be involved in helping to elect godly people to our country.
McClintock in California.
Tom McClintock from California.
A critical race in the last election, I think.
Yes. Some other ones, Michelle Bachman, Jeff Davis from Kentucky. He's a homeschool dad. I could go on and on.
Here, I read you from your site, 60 campaigns over the years. That's amazing.
In 2010, in the midterm elections, we endorsed 41 candidates. We deployed 900 Generation Joshua volunteers, parents, and staff. And, Kevin, those 900 volunteers in the last 5 days leading up to the vote, I think it was November 3rd, they made over 1 million voter contacts.
That's an incredible opportunity
for these kids to see they can make a difference.
And grassroots really is effective, and it certainly was in 2010. With the Tea Party grassroots movements very, very active. Okay, let's talk a little bit about these homeschool teams, because for the most part they are homeschoolers.
That is correct.
Kind of tied into the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, although not limited to that. So we should say that if private school, public school kids, they can be involved as well. But my question is this. Dr. Brian Ray comes out with a study. He says homeschoolers 14 times more likely to be involved in politics over their counterparts in public and private schools. And he's speaking for 18 to 25-year-old homeschool graduates. What is it that homeschoolers are so passionate about, Will? What is it that engages them in these races?
I think it's because, and I think every homeschool family might have something different that motivates them, but for all of us across the board, we're a minority, Kevin. We're always going to be a minority, at least currently. I don't really anticipate that 50% or more of the school-age population will be educated at home. I would love if that happened. But as a minority, we realize that if we don't stand up for our freedom, they're going to go away. Yeah. And they're going to be taken away, and we'll lose this right to direct the education and upbringing of our children. And as a result, homeschoolers, homeschooled students are, as Brian Ray said, far more likely to be involved in the political process. Many of the young people were there with their parents lobbying at the state capitals for homeschool freedom.
Right.
And they saw, we can stand up as American citizens, as Christians. We can be good stewards of this freedom that God has given us to be citizens of the United States of America. And as a result of being good stewards of that, we need to stand up for what's right.
Well, I think it's a matter of being able to see the battle lines. If
exactly.
you can't see the battle lines, nobody's going to be engaged. The blood's not going to rush, and nobody's going to run into the battle if they can't see that there's something at stake.
And unfortunately, as you know, many of the young people in the public schools, they're told, well, there's no right or wrong, and it's whatever you want truth to be. And you're absolutely right.
What do you have
motivated.
Left to fight for? Yeah, what's there to fight for? Ah, he's right. He's right. Everybody's right. I mean, come on. Can't we all come together and have a big old fat consensus? If that's the case, there is no right and wrong, then who's motivated to do anything for anything?
I wouldn't be motivated.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a real sign of the postmodern relativistic way of thinking. You know, it really demotivates the masses from doing anything. And of course, the battle between good and evil, right and wrong, has waged for a long, long time. How do you draw those lines as you work with these young people?
That is a great question. As we work with the young people, you know, we're talking about getting involved in politics and government, but we always go back to the basics. And we say to the young people, we're overtly Christian, Kevin, in what we do with our summer camps, with everything we say. You know, if you elect good people to Congress, that's all well and good. But it's never about – politics can never change the Plato who said, let me write the songs of the land and I don't need to write its laws. And what he was saying was that where the culture is going, where the people's hearts are going, that's where the laws are going to follow.
Yeah.
So we tell the young people, we're straight up, we're like, the most important thing that you will ever do is make that decision about your spiritual state. And we say in a youthful relationship with Jesus Christ through salvation in Jesus, for there's no other name by which you can be saved.
Will, as you look to the future, what would be your goals? I mean, are you looking for more freedom, less abortion? I mean, you have something in mind.
My biggest goal, Kevin, and this is something none of us can accomplish, only God can, is that more and more people will come to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, sure.
And when that happens, then we'll see things turn around in our nation.
Yeah.
Abortion will end.
Right.
Not necessarily, I mean, the laws are important. We need to work for those laws. But not necessarily because it's against the law, but because people will say, why would I choose death when I can choose life?
In other words, the regenerating effect of God's work in the hearts and minds and lives of people is going to affect politics in some way, shape, or form. But you're also saying that as that happens, especially with our future leaders, we want to lead in a good direction.
Exactly. We are training the young people, you know, to be Christians out there, be salt and light, but also to be servant leaders, to be people who will stand up and say, even if it's not popular and politically, but stand up and say, here, this is right, this is wrong. Abortion is a violation of our human right to life. We need to stand against that. And it's completely holistic. It all does fit together.
Sure, sure. You know, as you look to the future, Will, I have to say, I think the future is going to get a little more complicated. A little more difficult. Economically, I see more stresses ahead with the bankrupt Social Security system. Very, very possible. What kind of leader, what kind of character are you looking for in a future leader?
The best example we have, and this is something I talk to the kids usually on our summer camp when we have our first chapel message. I say the best example of leadership is what Jesus Christ himself gave. The Son of God, God himself, the night before he went to the cross, he took off his robes, wrapped a towel around himself, and washed his disciples' feet. And so often we have in pop culture or in Washington, D.C., we have examples of leaders who stand up and just say, it's all about me, and they're kind of the big man on campus. And that's not what biblical leadership is. And frankly, that's not going to fix the problems our country faces.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think we're going to be up against some significant challenges. And to be honest with you, Will, I think we're seeing a lack of strength in leaders to just be consistent and say, you know, we really need to be sensible about the budgets here. We can't spend ourselves into bankruptcy. I'm not sure we have the character to pull stuff like that off. It may be because we're just not raising young men and women in strong families. And maybe it gets back to what we were just talking about. Are we raising our children to be good fathers and mothers and raise their own children in stable families?
Exactly. And also the question along with that is, are we as parents setting a good example for our kids?
Sure.
My dad and mom were heavily involved in politics growing up. I'm the oldest of eight. I'm a homeschool grad.
Okay.
And it was seeing their example of being involved politically.
Yeah.
In particular, my dad was heavily involved with the pro-life movement, you know, picketing outside of abortion clinics.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that example, that really sparked in me the interest and the passion to be involved and doing what I'm doing today.
Exactly. And I think the word generation is critical, because it was the generation that came out that eventually gave birth to the Joshua generation. And hopefully we're seeing some generational continuity where children are going to continue and build upon the things that their parents gave them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's what we need. If it's okay, Kevin, let me give the web pages where people can find out more.
Do.
You can go very simply to generationjoshua.org. for information on Generation Joshua. And we had mentioned our iGovern summer leadership camps. We have one the first weekend of June. It's on the campus of Patrick Henry College. And then we have one on the third weekend of August in Colorado itself, over at the Eagle Lake Campground in Colorado Springs, from August 14th through 20th. I'm sorry, the third week in August. And parents can find out information at generationjoshua.org/iGovern, I-G-O-V-E-R-N.
And all the info in relation to Generation Joshua available at generationjoshua.org. Will Estrada, thanks so much for joining us on Generations. It's been great. Now, I have hope for the future. I trust you do, too.
I do, too. Amen.
Well, great interview today from Will Estrada and the Generation Joshua folks. Again, folks, that website is generationjoshua.org for more information. My name is Kevin Swanson, and I want to invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down some hope and some vision for the next generation.
You have been listening to Generations with Kevin Swanson, where we take a look at life through a biblical worldview and a generational focus.